Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we have Jeff Kelm, the National Tournament Director at Federation Angler, which oversees tournament operations for the Masters Walleye Circuit, the National Walleye Tour, the National Team Championship, and the Sturgeon Bay Open Bass Tournament even. So kind of a lot going on there. And Jeff, for anybody that follows tournament angling, for me, we talk about that all the time. We talk to the anglers all the time on this podcast. Jeff is the guy that is on stage on the microphone doing the weigh-ins and doing all that stuff. But his job is so much more than that. And it was really fun to have him on for the first time and just get to know him a little bit personally. But talking about his job and just everything that entails, being a tournament director for the highest level walleye tournaments and the Sturgeon Bay Bass Tournament, Sturgeon Bay Open Bass Tournament. Jeff, very interesting guy, a very, very cool and unique story to how he got to do what he does today. And then we definitely hash out some cool topics, the things that he goes through and just what it's like to be, be in his shoes a little bit, because he would be, that guy that, the tournament director is definitely one of those guys that when it's going really, really good, everybody loves him and it's really cool. But when tournaments go through a little bit of maybe some drama, maybe some controversy, maybe some rule changes, what's going on there? He's that guy too that has to be able to communicate, to both sides, on the regulators and pass that information on to the anglers. He's in charge of the rule meetings and interpreting the rules and getting them out there and answering everybody's questions, and probably really, really chaotic. He definitely, in this interview is pretty calm about it all. So he seems like he handles it pretty well, but just doing what he does, he definitely encounters some very interesting things in his job. So I wanted to have him on and have him tell his story a little bit and talk about some of these things, and hopefully I get to do it again. So anyways, here we go. We got tournament director Jeff Kelm. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. JT Outdoor Products has created a phenomenal lineup of technique-specific rods built entirely to give any angler the advantage against a tournament field, or more importantly, the target species of the day. For any angler that is looking to take their next fishing experience to another level, consider the confidence you might have with a JT rod in your hands. For more information on all the rod offerings at JT, head to their website. That's jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Also on the website, take the time to look up the impressive pro staff that JT has put together and find out why so many top industry pros, from tournament anglers to fishing guides across the Midwest, swear by the rods built at JT Outdoor Products. Anyways, all right, man. Well, Jeff Kelm, I appreciate you having the time, man. This is your first time on. I have a lot of tournament anglers, guys that and we have them on, we talk fishing, and I just thought it'd be really, really cool to have somebody on, have you on specifically, just kind of representing yourself and where you come from and what you do for a living, in the industry and in tournament fishing, and because I think you have a really, really cool job. It's obviously really, really unique, but I don't know much about it, and so I'm just kind of excited to learn. I think that there's probably a whole lot that you do that people don't see, that people don't know about, and kind of want to touch on some of that stuff and find out what makes that all tick and what makes all that work. But that being said, to get to know you, I got to establish that a little bit, man. Jeff, I don't know nothing about you. This is the first time we've ever talked. Where are you from, man? Where does this all begin? Where are you from? And I assume you got into this because you like to fish, I'm hoping. So tell me a little bit about your fishing story and where that all begins.
Yeah, so I'm originally from just north of Milwaukee in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. I live in central Wisconsin now. And yeah, I grew up, fishing. I grew up next to the water, salmon fishing, fishing for perch when we had a real great perch fishery up and down the shoreline of Lake Michigan. Did a lot of stuff ice fishing wise as a kid. And so, I grew up with a passion for fishing. I was in Boy Scouts, and you would find me down at the the lake fishing early morning before everybody else got up. If they were looking for Jeff, they knew where to go find me. And I just always loved it. And I dreamed, you know, when I was a kid that I could, you know, go fish for a living. I didn't know what that really looked like. I would watch the TV shows and all that. And I think, man, that just seems like that'd be a lot of fun. As I went through school, I thought maybe I would align myself with doing a conservation officer type thing or biologist, forester. I knew I wanted to be in the outdoors somehow, some way. And as time went on, my life really pointed me more towards media, actually, of all things. It probably was appropriate too. Every one of my report cards says talk too much in class and,
oh, yeah,
you know, things like that. So I probably was destined to have a job where I'm speaking for a living, probably in front of everybody and all of that anyways. And honestly, this all kind of came about because I did have a passion to fish as an adult. I had a great job actually as a radio station DJ. I was an assistant program director for some stations in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, and found a connection with kind of, I guess I'd say one of my heroes of television back in the day was a gentleman named Dan Small. He had a show called Outdoor Wisconsin, and it was a PBS television show every night, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. It was on. I grew up watching it, and I found a contact for him through the radio station. And I was like, you know, I'm going to talk to this guy about fishing, like on TV, like thinking I could make this transition. So I reached out to him and told him who I was, told him I had a passion for fishing. At the time, I was really, really passionate about fishing the harbors up and down Lake Michigan for trout in the wintertime, really trying to hone in on what that looked like, jigging and tip ups and things like that. And so I talked to him about that, and he's like, well, you know, someday we can maybe get out a chance to fish. And I don't think he was blowing me off, but I think, you know, he was like, yeah, okay, yeah, I get a bunch of people that want to come fish with me. I have a television show, right? And believe it or not, 2 weeks later, I'm down on the harbor in Sheboygan. He is down there filming a television show.
Oh man, you gave him the idea, I bet.
Well, he was down there filming a show, and my buddy and I were the only ones catching fish. So eventually we have a flag go up, and he comes running over with a TV camera.
Wow.
And they film us catching those fish, or catching that fish. And so we catch the fish, we do the whole TV thing. We kind of play it up like it just has to happen organically in that moment. And catch the fish. Camera turns off. He turns to me and goes, are you Jeff Kelm? And I was like, I am. And from that moment on, we've really had a great relationship. And in fact, since 2008, he and I have done a radio show together every single week since 2008 that airs on 21 stations across the state of Wisconsin, parts of Minnesota, and parts of Illinois. So really, really kind of a cool piece of the industry that I got into that way. Along with that, I got to meet a bunch of other people through other connections as I got into the ice fishing side of things, because that's kind of where I decided to focus, was the ice side of stuff. It was considerably cheaper. So, you know, working at a radio station, let me tell you, you're not making a lot of money. So whatever you could do budget-wise, that's what you did. And so I got on the ice side of things, and I ended up hooking up with a couple of guys that were part of the ice team, which we all know the ice team as this section of the Clam Corporation. At the time, it was Clam, Strike Master, and Vexlar, and it was kind of a marketing pro staff wing or so of those companies. And met them, these couple of guys that did that, and they had invited me to reach out to some of these others. And again, I've kind of got this platform or the radio show or the radio station. And now I've had a chance to fish with Dan. I have a little bit of swagger to throw around. Ultimately, got a chance to join the ice team. Found out about tournament ice fishing. That's where this really gets into my job now. Found out about tournament ice fishing through all of this. Started doing so, fishing the NAIFC North American Ice Fishing Circuit with Jack Baker. And that was back in 2009, I believe, is when I first started fishing that. Fished that for many years, had a chance to fish on the USA Ice Team, been to 3 world championships in the U.S., Kazakhstan, and Ukraine. Many national championship opportunities on the NAIFC side of things. Jack was the tournament director for the NAIFC. In 2017, I went to the championship, and I had just been go from working at a job at an archery shop that I had just kind of at an opportunity just to kind of play around. My wife and I had moved, and we were I didn't know what I wanted to do yet. Wasn't at a radio station anymore, things like that. And I told Jack that I needed a job, you know, just as in just chatting with him. He goes, well, I was just hired at the MWC as tournament director, and I need somebody to come along with me to bump fish and to help set things up. He goes, I don't really know what the job entails, but I know they'll pay you, you know, cash that day type of deal. And at least you can go home with some money in your pocket that week. I'm like, okay, I'll check that out. So then the very first MWC event back in 2017, got on site, started working that day or that weekend. They pulled me to the side and said, hey, if you want to, we will give you a salary. We'll give you a truck, but we need somebody to travel with Jack. We need somebody to be his right-hand man. No problem. I mean, I'll figure this out with my wife and kids and all of that. We'll figure out how this works. And jumped on board with Jack. Took 3 events before they go, you know what? Jack's not the guy to be on stage. I think we need somebody with a little more stage presence and things. And so they put me on stage to start doing the emceeing. And since then, they've never taken me off.
Yeah.
And then when Jack retired from the tournaments in 2021, I took over as tournament director. So since 2017, I've done the emceeing. Since 2021, I've been the tournament director. And then we were hired to do the National Walleye Tour last year in 23 and here in 24. So that's kind of what leads us up to this. So just knowing the right people, having that passion for fishing and continuing to pursue some neat opportunities when they present themselves really has brought me to this point here.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's an awesome series of events, man. That is cool. Like, and when you got into like where you're at now, you know, or like talking about the MWC and stuff, like how much did you know about, you know, the top level walleye fishing tournament scene? Like how much did you know about the MWCs? Like, were you following that stuff a lot?
No, I really wasn't. I knew a couple of the names, you know, people that you just can't ignore that have this, you know, these expansive resumes that you know them from watching the TV shows, or in my case, there were some that drifted from the open water to the ice side of things. So I knew some of those guys, but I really didn't follow any of it, but I fell in love with it instantly. It was the coolest thing to walk into the tournament environment, be around all of the brains that you find at these events, and know that I'm going to walk away with a check no matter what. I don't have to try to beat any of these guys. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. I mean, so yeah, I mean, it, you know, on the outside looking in, I mean, it definitely looks like an exciting job. It looks like, yeah, you're rubbing shoulders with all these anglers. That's a cool thing. But also, you know, you see the business side of things, and yeah, it's like making money in the industry isn't an easy thing to do. Like finding any opportunity to just be involved in the industry is so many people's dreams, right? I mean, it's just the thought of being associated to the outdoor industry is like, you know, that, you know, all the young people that just like to hunt and fish, you know, they think that's their dream, but they're, you know, I think we'll get into it, but you know, there's a lot more to it than that. You know, not every job is probably as glamorous, you know, as it seems on the outside, but you definitely do have one of those kind of exciting jobs, and I guess you're, you know, your ability to speak and your experience with the radio and doing interviews and stuff, obviously, you know, gave you that you know, the shoe-in. You're the shoe-in guy. They had to give you a shot, I imagine. You know, for you, doing it, you know, to this point and getting into it, what is your favorite part of it? Like, what is the most exciting part of it for you that you take home that you appreciate the most about it?
You know, the most exciting part is seeing the accomplishments of these anglers. I mean, I know what it means in your heart to compete and succeed, to pour that effort in and get to the level you want to be at, whether that's, you know, in the ice fishing world, in any kind of open water scenario, at any level, whether you're fishing just a Wednesday night league, you're fishing the MWC, you're fishing the NWT, there is blood, sweat, and tears in every piece of that. There are sacrifices that go unnoticed to most people. The vacations, the walking away from a spouse, or having to, you know, leave your kids, or just the thousand of other things that you have on your mind the second you have to go back home. But all of that is set to the side. And when you can succeed in that moment, especially I think as men, that really weighs heavy on all of us. Success, it drives us. And so when I see that in these events, and because I get to see the winner every time, right? Like, I get to be a part of that moment every time.
Yep. You get to tell him. He hears it from you first.
Yeah. It is such a fun experience to be in that moment. And I mean, just a few weeks ago, watching Eric McCoy win, and Eric is great on the stage. He's got this nervous sensibility to him. He's just shaking like a leaf every time he's up there, and to see the emotion really just start to rive through him, realizing what he just did, and he's got his dad right there and all that, like, those are such special moments that I never want to get in the way of, but I'm so glad I get to be a part of that.
So what all goes into it? Like, what's your job responsibility? I mean, and you know, you're the director now. I mean, so I imagine there's a whole bunch. And I'm definitely like, I'm curious about it all, but I'm probably most curious about, you know, the things that people don't see or don't know about, you know, maybe things that happen either behind the scenes or just not necessarily on tournament day, you know, what all goes into your job?
Yeah. So, you know, the job is a lot of finding the right information, from the right sources. I'll tell you what, I have a feeling this job, and I can't speak to what it was like 30 years ago when there was no internet available to people, but I have to imagine right now there's a lot of my job that differs from years ago based on the fact that there is information, right, wrong, or otherwise, available to anybody out there for any reason. So a lot of what ends up happening throughout the year is information or questions posed to me based off of information other people have read or heard about. And it's kind of like herding cats at times, because you can get to one, you know, maybe one answer or one question from an angler, and yet the rest are already off in the weeds. And you're like, I have no idea where you're pulling this from, you know? So a lot of it is information seeking, that I end up having to do, but really the basics of the job is, at least in my particular case, is it starts off with a schedule where I'm working directly with communities or host sites to align an event as best as I can when the anglers really want to be there, because you want to have a desire for not only the touring pros or the touring anglers, but you want, you know, locals to want to jump in and test their skill. You know, it's no secret that having those locals jump in helps with the prize pots and things like that. If you don't have them, you just don't have as much money in the pot sitting there for whomever is going to win that event. So you want to make sure that you've got an event that people want to attend. And that starts with a schedule. That starts with putting those dates and those locations in the right place. And we won't always get it right for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's permitting. Sometimes it's the host has other events going on. They want you there. They want to support an event, but they've got to fit it in their schedule. Sometimes it's a matter of you know, what do I have going on? Not personally, but other events, because we run the Masters Walleye Circuit, the North American Bass Challenge, which is runs the Sturgeon Bay Open events in both the fall and the spring in Wisconsin, the Mercury National event, the Mercury National Owners event in Fond du Lac every year we operate, the National Team Championship we operate. All of these different things are kind of events. Some of them are the same weekend every single year, and others move around to different places. Something like the National Team Championship, the NTC, it's 300 boats. Not everybody can host 300 boats. So you've got to kind of figure out a host who can just get 300 boats, you know, 300 teams into an area, have hotels or have places people can stay. And then you can set it on a calendar. And if that ends up being in the way of other events, then somebody's got to move somewhere. And sometimes you can't move things. So it's a bit of a chess piece at times to get that schedule right.
Oh yeah.
But it kind of starts with that. And then once we have that schedule out, we're able to kind of work in the nuances of each place. So whether it be a particular regulation that is going to cause confusion or problems. So if we've got boundaries or borders, different states, borders of different countries, whatever it may be, we need to look at that and assess what if any issue is going to happen here. And sometimes those things come up as we go along. You know, sometimes somebody will, there'll be a change in a regulation down the line. We'll pull a permit a year out, and all of a sudden something comes through some state legislature, and now what we were planning isn't going to work out at all because they've changed one regulation or another. And so those are kind of little fires that I have to try to, you know, be ready to fight as we go throughout the year. And it's a lot of angler questions. It's a lot of phone calls asking particular questions about venues or how things might work. And that's probably the most interesting part of the job, because I know as an angler, if I have a question about, can I go a certain place? Like, is that within the boundary? Can I use a certain type of bait? The question is being posed to me with the idea that that angler wants to do that. Right. So I have to keep in mind that, okay, this person just asked, is this a I just want to know this for my own personal reason, or is this going to be the competitive advantage now I need to watch for? Is this something I have to tell everybody? Because it's going to become an issue. If only one guy knows, it's going to become an issue. And deciphering what that looks like and why the question is being asked sometimes is a challenging piece. It's fun to decipher, but it becomes a challenging piece at times.
JT Outdoor Products has created a phenomenal lineup of technique-specific rods built entirely to give any angler the advantage against a tournament field, or more importantly, the target species of the day. For any angler that is looking to take their next fishing experience to another level, consider the confidence you might have with a JT rod in your hands. For more information on all the rod offerings at JT, head to their website. That's jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Also on the website, take the time to look up the impressive pro staff that JT has put together and find out why so many top industry pros, from tournament anglers to fishing guides across the Midwest, swear by the rods built at JT Outdoor Products. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Oh yeah, and like nobody's worse at sharing information than anglers, right?
Yeah, that's
right. When somebody figures something out, you can bet nobody's going to learn from that person.
Exactly. And you almost have to be careful of the question you ask, right? Like, because if you ask the question, and I've got to now pose it to everybody, hey, the question was asked about this, I mean, it may blow your strategy out of the water.
Oh yeah. I imagine.
But on the same hand, we want things as fair and as competitive as possible. We want to make sure that transparency is there. And I try to provide that to anglers as best as I possibly can. My role within the organization that I work for, is at times, a moderator. You know, we are hired in to run events like the National Team Championship or the National Walleye Tour. Those are not events that the company I work for own or anything like that. So I'm kind of an in-between at times, you know, like, hey, how are we going to handle this? I ask that to Outdoor Teamworks or Bass Pro Shops. And then I take that back to the anglers, and it's kind of an in-between at times. The dance is a little bit different on the Masters Walleye Circuit side because that is owned by the company I work for. So I kind of know the processes on the backside a little bit better, a little bit more intimate with that than I am on the National Walleye Tour side. So sometimes there's just a dance that I have to do in between, you know, getting information for an angler. Why did we do this? Why did we do that? Well, it's like, well, this isn't my business. So let me go find out for you. And, I'd rather them come to me than go, you know, trying to find an answer on the internet or something like that, because that's how you get all this misinformation out there.
I mean, that probably frames up, you know, the tougher parts of your job. Excuse me. That probably frames up, you know, the toughest part of the job is, you know, just all that communication. And like you say, that information seeking, where it's, you know, your experience probably brings you to, you know, you can hedge some of these things off, or you just kind of set the tournament up in such a way that it's just so much more black and white. But man, almost nothing's going to be black and white when you got anglers trying to leverage every possible advantage that they can have. Like if there's like one thing possible, it's like, well, that's the boundary and I can't bring my boat over there, but can I make a long cast past it? You know, it's like, man, I can only imagine, of the questions that you've had, you know, borderline ridiculous, but not when you're considering what these guys are fishing for. I mean, they're looking for everything, but you know, the tougher parts of your job, I'm curious about that too. I mean, there's, you know, I just feel like, you know, directing a tournament and even just emceeing a tournament, you probably got just some, you know, there's just some interesting challenges, you know, when you're on stage. You know, we were laughing and laughing when we first started talking about, you know, pronouncing people's names. But but you know, I'm just curious about the challenges of the job. I mean, man, there's just got to be some struggles sometimes that that are challenging. What's kind of the tougher part of your job these days, and how do you get through that?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of the tough points of the job end up stemming from anglers, you know, what they perceive versus the information, the facts that I actually can gather. I can't be everywhere all at one time, and something like a polygraph is going to cover information if there is known deception, right? So a polygraph, you know, we can always say, you know, we'll polygraph people. Well, that's great. That does, that can, you know, be a resolution to a problem at times. But my biggest challenge ends up being so-and-so saw so-and-so do something. Now I've got to seek out the facts of did what they see actually happen. It'd be like driving down the interstate and you're doing 55, you get passed by somebody who's clearly going way faster, you call the police show up, and by the time they show up, that person's now doing the speed limit. And you're like, no, I saw that person go that much faster. And now that officer has to go, well, I mean, do you have proof? You know, so those are the types of moments in my job where trying to seek out as much information as possible to be able to correctly handle that situation is really, in that moment, the toughest part, the absolute toughest part, because each person involved in that moment wants an answer. One way or another, they want an answer. And when there's multiple things in an event that happen all within a relative short period of time, there's a lot of those plates to juggle. Like, oh, I was checking on this and I was checking on that, whether it was somebody saying, hey, I saw so-and-so came in to the checkpoint late. Well, okay, I've got them marked in on time. I've got to find out, you know, I've got to find out a little bit more information from the person who is checking them in, if this really was observed and where they observed it. And because I've got people telling me that they were late. What was that particular instance happened at the National Walleye Tour event in Oconto, where we had an angler come up to me and they said, well, I saw so-and-so was late coming across the line. But I was watching from over here and I could see down there that they were late. And I was like, okay, well, I've got to find out from my check-in person what happened. Ended up being able to actually get into the weeds of all of it. And the check-in person had taken a photo with a timestamp of that boat coming in, and they were in on time. And I at least had that information. I was able to go find that information. So I went to talk to the volunteer and I was like, so this is the situation. She's like, oh, well, I took pictures. Here's the timestamp. I was like, oh, this is so good.
Well, that's excellent.
The type of stuff that makes the job a whole lot easier instead of going the he said, she said route, right?
Yeah, yeah, because you're ultimately, that's a big, big, big part of your responsibility is to try to, you know, or at least you take it as your responsibility to create the most fair competition you can, right? I mean, that's, you know, you're just working as hard as you can so that everybody feels like they're competing fairly.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. And then that turns back to an angler has a question. They want to do something. And it's like, well, okay. You know, most of the time I don't personally care, but is it fair for the rest of the crew or the rest of the event, you know, to say, yes, you can do that, but the other people in the event don't know. Sometimes we get into a situation where we're not going to weigh fish in early. And I get a phone call at 10 o'clock in the morning. Hey, I've got my fish. Can I come in early? I was like, well, we're not weighing fish early. Well, can I come in and you can courtesy check my fish? I was like, well, everybody else is out there. They don't know we're weighing in fish early or not, you know, that I'm going to correct your fish. I don't know that it's fair that I check yours when I may have another boat out there that also has all their fish and they're just floating around out there waiting for their time to come in.
Yeah.
You know, so those are those moments in the job where I'm like, oof, you know, I will, if I know I can at least answer the question the same way every time. The it really comes down to just being consistent. If you can be consistent with your answers, you can be consistent with what you do for the anglers. I think they do respect that.
So what is, like, you know, maybe we have to keep talking about scenarios or whatever, but like, what is sort of that order of operations when anglers do have questions? Is it as soon as they pop in their head, are they supposed to reach out to you? Or, you know, because I imagine when you go to all these, you take, you know, these big tournament fields and you go to all these places, you know, a lot of the seasoned veterans probably understand, you know, how to handle a lot of those situations. But there's a lot of people, you know, the local fishing, you know, base that you're inviting to come fish these tournaments. You go to a location, you get a lot of people that maybe it's the only NWT or the only MWC that they fish, you know, for that year or, you know, in 5 years or whatever it is. Right. And there's just a lot, you know, you get a lot of people that just, don't entirely understand the flow of information and all that sort of thing. And so they have lots of questions for you. You know, like what are some of the more appropriate, like what is the most appropriate, you know, I guess, yeah, order of operations when it comes to things like that? If somebody sees something that they want to report, do they just call you on your cell phone right away? Is there like a form they fill out, or is there a sort of like a time after the tournament where you're just ready for questions? Like what is that sort of system for you?
Sure. Yeah. So it's in our rules. And I say it at the events, it's in our rules that if you notice something, you know, like a rules violation or something, you must contact me immediately. It is an immediate phone call to me. And at the meetings, I give out my phone number. My phone number is on, you know, the fact sheets. It's posted on the website. There's many places people can reach me, you know, so if they know something before an event, they, you know, there's quite often where I'll get a phone call from an angler, a local angler to the area, to kind of just forewarn me that, hey, this has been an issue in the past for other events. You know, just want to let you know that's out there. Maybe you need to look at it. Sometimes it's something like a bait situation. Red Wing was a situation this year where we had to really make sure everybody understood the rules when it came to live bait. The state of Minnesota has very specific regulations regarding live bait. Most states do. And we need to make sure that people followed those rules. And I think the anglers did ultimately a very good job of doing so. But that was brought to our attention kind of as we rolled through the off season. And it was like, oh yeah, we need to really make sure we address this so that we're not inadvertently causing, you know, anglers to have a possible violation just because they're trying to follow tournament rules. And then they don't realize they're breaking a state rule because they're just so worried about, oh, I don't want, you know, I don't want Jeff telling me I did something wrong here. We try to lay that all out. So in the case of like Red Wing, got the phone call early. Hey, you may want to just be mindful that the bait situation, the willow cat situation from, you know, Wisconsin may be an issue. And so let's get in front of that. And so we did.
What were some of those rules?
Yeah. So in the case of Red Wing, Minnesota has a rule where you cannot bring in live minnows or leeches into the state. And the way the DNR polices that is it cannot come across a bridge in your boat, truck, or car. Excuse me. And it cannot come on the land. So if you come across on water, you can't bring your bait bucket up onto the shoreline. So when we had anglers calling and asking if they could use willow cats in the event, the answer wasn't, no, you can't use them, because we knew that they were buying them from Wisconsin. We had to explain to them what the Minnesota rules were. If that bait never reaches the shoreline on the Minnesota side and you stay in those border waters, you're perfectly legal. That came right from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. But if you were to put those willow cats in your boat and drive across the bridge to come over to Treasure Island to launch your boat, you now have been in violation,
right?
Because those fish have now come across the bridge. And so we needed to get that information out to anglers, and it helped tremendously stave off a number of phone calls, you know, because I was starting to really get a number of them. It was clear that anglers were starting to call around and try to find out where can they get willow cats, finding out that really Wisconsin was going to be the only route to go. And then they had to adapt their plans for, okay, my boat's going to have to sit in border waters. We'll have to just rent a slip. The bait will have to stay in the boat, or we'll have to stay over in Wisconsin. And now that bait can be taken off the boat and put into a cooler or whatever it may be, whatever the situation may be. They can plan for those types of things so that competitive edge is still fair across the board. May take a little more planning on one person's part than another, but that's just part of tournament fishing.
Oh yeah. So what if guys were the guys that used willow cats, what did they have to do then?
Yeah. So they had to launch their boat on the Wisconsin side. And then their boat needed to remain in border waters, for the event. So, the event boundaries were open beyond those border waters. So you could roll up into, let's say, the Vermilion River on the Minnesota side, which is then considered interior Minnesota waters.
Oh yeah.
You could not have willow cats or any minnows or leeches from Wisconsin, for that matter, in those waters. So you could not go past that border water point, that railroad trestle. Same thing for the top side of pool number three. When you enter into that Hastings water, which is considered interior Minnesota waters, where the St. Croix and the Mississippi split, you could not enter that portion with those willow cats or any live bait or leeches from Wisconsin or any other state for that matter into that point. You had to remain in border waters, and really for the most part that wasn't an issue for the anglers. Most of them are fishing the border waters anyways. I don't know that I know of anybody, certainly anybody that cashed a check, that ended up kind of going off into some other portion. They really were focusing on wing dam situations and things like that were within that border water.
Yeah. So that would definitely be, so, you know, like there's a lot of interpretation there. But when you get all that information and you lay it all out, and then you give the anglers that opportunity to, cause I imagine in the morning there's like a boat check and all that. So that can all be done on the water.
Yeah. Yeah. So we do our checks on the water. And even at this particular event at Red Wing, we did some random checks online, on land on the Minnesota side. I had my crew go over and just check a couple of random boats each day to say, just to make sure that there was no willow cats or anything like that in those boats. And if there was live bait in the boats, that they were able to see a receipt from Minnesota. And so we did that. Anglers, you know, we grabbed a couple of random ones. Nobody had any issues there. And then we do our safety and live well inspections on the water most of the time. That way we know the minute they're going out, there's no situation of them, you know, pulling into a marina or another dock space or something like that. that when they leave, when we observe that live well, it does not have walleyes in it, and that they, more importantly, have the safety stuff. I would say more importantly, but it is truly, life or death situations. We want to make sure they have their safety equipment on and affixed correctly. A fishing tournament is just a fishing tournament, but I don't ever want to have to make a phone call to somebody, somebody's spouse or anybody about, hey, there was an accident type thing.
Yeah, all the fishing stuff aside, all the frills and all the glitz and glamour of it all. Yeah, at the backbone of it is that safe and
Yeah,
fair.
everybody
A
comes back.
safe, yeah, for sure. For sure, man. Yeah, dude. And as a fan, like I'm a outside looking in kind of guy. I'm a fan. I love following along all the different, tournament circuits and following along with the anglers and whatever. I'm a fan, right? And with like the NWT and I'm not exclusive to the NWT, but NWT is the big stage. Historically it was so simple to be a fan in terms of like interpreting these things, going from body of water to body of water, because it was always like a five fish limit. So when I look at the
Sure.
weights, I always know what's going on. Like, this year the limits are changed in certain places. And I think that like for the casual fan, like sometimes it's like, well, that just seems weird and peculiar, or just, almost random, right? That's just like another one of those rule changes this year where I'm just kind of curious, what's sort of like the generalizer, sort of the big picture interpretation of that, with the rule changes on just like the fish limits from certain places, because I think there's a lot more that goes into that too than people would, probably know or understand.
Yeah, so we work with the Department of Natural Resources in each state that we go to, pulling permits where needed. And there are times where those permits dictate what we do. In the state of Wisconsin, on the Bay of Green Bay in particular, when we run a catch hold release tournament, which is what the National Walleye Tour and the Masters Walleye Circuit events are, they're catch hold release. When we run those events on the Bay of Green Bay, between the second weekend of June and the first weekend of September, we are permitted for a three fish limit is what it states in the permit, is a three fish limit. They're doing that to protect the resources on the Bay of Green Bay. They understand that there are times where anglers are out on the water. They catch a big fish or any fish first thing in the day. They take that fish throughout the day, and maybe by the time they get to the end of the day, that fish isn't doing as well. We do as much as we possibly can, but to avoid a situation where we have a large mortality rate issue, they limit the amount of fish allowed by the permit. And so we've got to follow that. When we get into a situation where, like Red Wing, where we're fishing a border water situation, it becomes a challenge to realize what the anglers can and cannot do and try to put yourself in that situation. So if we were to say, keep the regulations as they are on the body of water for Red Wing, and you had your four fish limit, which per angler, that's what you get. But on the Minnesota side, you can essentially call as long as you don't have your limit. On the Wisconsin side of the river, literally down the imaginary line down the middle of the river, you cannot call, period. End of story. So the situation was, okay, I'm on the Wisconsin side. I can see I've got a big fish on the line. What would it take to take this trolling motor and just troll past the line?
Right.
And now I'm in Minnesota and I can call here. So those are those types of situations where we're like, well, that's a competitive advantage that's not laid out in a rule anywhere. It's certainly not something that, a CO is necessarily going to be actively looking for, a conservation officer is going to be looking for, but it's definitely on the side of, I don't think that's going to be right.
Right.
But
that's,
it would
a gray
be the competitive
sure.
advantage that somebody would possibly find. And so we're sitting in a situation where, like, well, then we can't let them call fish out, because that's the type of situation that could happen back and forth there. You literally could drag a fish over to the Minnesota side before landing it and then call it out. And so we had the no call. We did the four fish and the three fish, the one man limit, based on feedback we received after Lake Winnebago last year, and a meeting we had with the anglers at Devil's Lake last year, where because there are differences between conservation officers and the discretion they have over things like who caught the fish, you know, whose hand was on that rod when the fish was landed, whose hand was on that rod when the fish was hooked, are you trolling, are you jigging, whose fish is that?
Yeah.
And the discretion is kind of all over the board. Each one of the CEOs you talk to says, well, you know, this, that, and the other. If you're trolling, it's fine. If you're jigging and you engage in that fish, that's yours, no matter if you hand the rod off or not. Okay. Because of that, we had anglers really afraid to say, I don't want to violate here. I don't want to put myself in a situation where I hand a rod off for any reason, and now we've got a problem. Now I've cheated in some way, or I feel bad. Like, I feel tainted in how I've done this.
Yeah.
And the other side of things, and we had some of the pros come up to me and talk to me about it. And I don't blame them for having this mentality. But if we said, you get three fish and you get three fish, but once you have your three fish, and this is the state of Wisconsin, this is the rule. Once you have caught your stated limit, you are done fishing for that species. Done. End of story. So if you're out walleye fishing, you caught your three, let's say you're the pro in front of the boat fishing with the forward-facing sonar, you're jigging for them, you've caught your three, now you're sitting down. You cannot fish anymore. And now you are solely, your co-angler is the sole angler in that boat now. If you are a pro angler and you've got everything on the line, that's a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah.
To put on your co, and a lot of anxiety.
You don't get to choose
you
your co-anglers, right? I mean, that's,
yeah, a lot of anxiety that you have. And the pros made it very clear, you know, hey, we're the ones that put this huge sum of money into these events. To sit down in their own boat, that's big. Now,
yeah, it is.
Some of them have no problems with that, and you get a great co who, you know, is able to emulate exactly what you're doing. It doesn't matter. But we have cos of all aptitudes, and because it's randomized, it can be all over the board. And so those types of feedback we took back with us and had a conference about and discussed, and it came down to, if we have a body of water wherever we're at, or we're permitted for less than five, we're going to go with that one man limit, so that we're never in a situation where somebody's questioning who caught a fish, did so-and-so catch a fish, or did the one angler catch all of them. We're never put into this situation where we've got to prove that stuff out. And it makes it a lot simpler on the rules, very black and white. This is what you get. There's no question about it. And that was the other part that the anglers asked for, is they want us and myself, as much as we can, to eliminate gray areas. Make sure everything is black and white so everybody's on the same page. And I don't disagree with him. I think that's exactly what we should do. And that's where some of this has come into, some of the changing of those regulations. Instead of having that gray area or make it black and white, it's a one-man limit. Where we go, where you can cull fish out, or you have a limit larger than you know, five or larger, there's going to be five fish in the boat. There's no problem with that.
Yeah, I think you're describing that really, really well. It just, because you're working so closely with, you know, the state departments, and in some cases where the tournaments are on border waters, you're working with multiple, you know, state rule sets.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And you know, again, for the untrained mind, I'm I would think, you know, why don't you just set a rule? Like, why doesn't, you know, the NWT, what, you know, why doesn't the NWT just sort of, you know, within those boundaries, you know, if, you know, talking about like who caught the fish or whatever, you know, why can't you just draw that up? Why can't you decide, okay, you know, this is our favorite version of that rule? Well,
sure.
Then, but if you're an angler, like, you know, that you know, you've got this other CO over here that, you know, in his discretion, he described it a different way and you kind of like that one more. Mm-hmm. Then you feel like you're cheated because you're losing out on, you know, what would otherwise be illegal, and that would be your competitive advantage. Yeah. So mm-hmm. that makes a ton of sense. It's like, you know, just look at the rules that are given. And the other thing too that I thought was very interesting is that, you know, when you apply for a tournament permit, you know, that you know, places like Green Bay where, you know, they, and, you know, for their own good reasons and intentions, you know, they restrict the one person limit to three for a mm-hmm. big tournament permit, you know, and that's been around since forever, but because there's two people in the boat, you allow for, you know, six, you weigh in five, that gives you one to play with. Like, you know, to observe tournament fishing on Green Bay for all these years and all these five fish limits, it's like, why did it crash to three? But describing that, you know, that makes a ton of sense. And those are rules that have been around for like a long time. We just didn't otherwise know.
Right.
You know, because you were, you know, two guys in the boat, you could do that. And,
right.
But yeah, talking about, you know, like who caught what fish, you know, that's a big deal too, because like you said, you know, the pros, they have so much more on the line, and there's a lot of guys that are trying to make a living doing this. And when your co-angler who you don't get to choose, you know, it's like ultimately drawn out of a hat, you know, for you, you know, that would dictate outcomes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I mean, that's where the fairness, you know, and then as a fan, and I tell this to all the guys too, it's like, you know, when you think about, you know, watching these tournaments and stuff, you know, like the intentional, like cheating and deception, I think that probably is way less, you know, in mm-hmm. the big picture, like there's way less of that going on, you know, than anything, but these unintentional or these rule interpretations and things like that, like making it as black and white as possible is so good. So everybody is operating under the same, you know, the same rules, you know, it makes the competition fair relative to those rules. And then because if I'm a fan, I just want to know that, you know, the best guys are winning, or, you know, I want the competition to yep. be fair so that whoever, you know, the top 20 are the top 20.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that ultimately, you know, digging into it, I mean, I'm lucky I get to talk to you guys, you know, and learn these things, but I hope people listen to it and then kind of teaches you a little bit of that perspective. Because man, gosh, you know, if you look at the top 20 of the Angler of the Year, they're the top 20. I mean, there's been some unbelievable performances this year, man. I just love the storylines that are happening, and some pretty fantastic fishing.
And can we talk about how young the top two anglers are?
Oh man, yeah. Well, just look at the top 10. You know, like,
I mean,
you know,
yeah, really the top 10, two, absolutely.
Yeah, like yeah. And I've had Eric and I've had Hunter on too. I mean, just a couple of great guys and great stories. Actually, just talked to Hunter recently. It was like a week or two ago or whatever, and just getting an update on his season. And yeah, man, mm-hmm. super young guys too, but definitely, you know, they're pedigreed. I mean, these guys, they're early in their, you know, their top shelf, you know, kind of that on the national stage and just being mm-hmm. in the highlights, but definitely some guys that are no strangers to tournament fishing. But yeah, man, looking at the youth that's out there, the future is bright for, you know, tournament fishing in the industry. And just, it's great that young people are getting into it, man. That's probably another thing that's encouraging for you and your job, you know, working with, you know, that it's not just an old boys club, and that, you know, there's an old guard, you know, that are kind of, you know, that can be tough to deal with too, I imagine, in certain, you know, places and scenarios. But yeah, that there's a lot of youth going on out there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, you know, there's people don't like change all the time. And so there's some people that will, you know, well, this isn't the way we've done it before. And I understand, and change can be difficult, and I don't blame anybody for maybe having that thought. But no, there are some great young sticks that they clearly have figured out the process of putting a quality tournament together. It's just been so awesome to be able to see. And, you know, it kind of stems from the regulation side of things, why, you know, maybe we had three fish and three fish for each angler on Green Bay before, but we've done five. What's changed in that is the forward facing sonar and more people picking off individual fish rather than trolling or bobber fishing. And I think these young guys are really on the forefront of that. They really have propelled that into motion, where they are just headhunting. You are just headhunting individual fish, and they are so good at being able to read the fish themselves when they get to see them. I mean, you talk to any one of these young guys, and they'll talk about a fish they threw a bait at 15 times, and they saw it to turn one way one time, and they thought, well, if I get around the other side of it and I pull it this way, you know, then it seems to want to eat when it turns to the left side rather than the right side. And I mean, it's crazy the way they're able to break it down. It's really, really fun to listen to.
No doubt about it. And it's out there for everybody, you know, the technology and the opportunity to get out and learn it and do it, you know, like learning, you know, meeting Hunter and interviewing him. I mean, he's a live bait rigger, born and raised and yep. baptized. And, yep. you know, he's just put his head down with the forward sonar deal. And, you know, Eric McCoy too, you know, he's baptized into trolling and live bait rigging and Tom Wynn coming from the bass world. You know, I mean, that's such a fun, unique story going on, you know, and Will, you know, he's coming up, you know, Northern Minnesota again, just, you know, Minnesota one line live bait rigging, a 9-foot Snell 4-pound test and a leech, you know, I mean, that's how these guys were raised in fishing, but it's a learned behavior. These guys, you know, Dylan Nussbaum, I mean, just an absolute mm-hmm. slugger, Max, you know, and, you know, even Dewey and John, and, you know, just, yep. I'm just rattling off the top 10 there. I mean, but then, you know, the guys, you know, trollers are always going to have their day on these big bodies of water, reservoirs and Great Lakes and stuff. You know, it's going to be tough to keep some of these guys out of the top 10 forever. You know, look, Keith, you know, sitting at not ninth for Angler of the Year right now. Mm-hmm. Kent mm-hmm. Anderson, Kevin McCoy. I mean, you know, yeah, not everybody's going to be exclusive to that, but yeah, you're right. It is so impressive, and they're fun storylines. There's no doubt about it. I think it's great. You know, it's all great. Like, whoever's doing good and whatever cool things are happening are all always going to be cool. And right now, that's a big part of it for sure. And seeing the young guys, I don't know. We've definitely been celebrating it. You know, on this podcast, I love doing those interviews and talking. And we always talk everything. We talk forward sonar. We talk, you know, bobber fishing. We talk bottom bouncers. We talk, you know, rigging live bait. We definitely talk it all here, because, you know, across the industry, it's still everything going on all the time. But in mm-hmm. the tournament world, you're right, man. It's pretty wild. What these guys are able to accomplish, and they're doing it together. They're networking, you know, people sharing information, how to do things, and teaching people. It's really cool. You get the front row seat. You get the front stage seat to see these guys come in with these impressive bags of fish. And yeah, man, that's really cool. Well, you're a busy guy, man. I appreciate you getting up early and doing this interview with me. I think I've definitely learned a lot. I appreciate it a lot. I think that, you know, talking about what you do, there is so much. I would not, oh my gosh, you'd need about 4 or 5 assistants to be checking your phone and your emails, I imagine, some days when it's just relentless and, you know, up all night answering questions for anglers and keeping everything fair and keeping everybody on the same page the best you can. It can't be the most fun glitz and glamour all the time. And so just glad to have you on and talk about some of those things and meet you a little bit and kind of have that conversation, have this conversation long enough that we can learn a little bit more about it and what makes that all tick and makes it all go. That being said, though, time wise, this is perfect. I think we've covered a whole bunch, and I appreciate it, Jeff. Well, how about this? Well, if anybody ever has any questions or, you know, what are some resources that we should promote? If you're willing, you know, throw your own stuff out there. You know, if somebody wanted to follow you on social media or be in, you know, kind of wanted to reach out with questions more specifically or otherwise, you know, what are, you know, some of the links to some of the tournaments and things that you're involved in that that we could promote? And then we'll just sign it off with that.
No, I Taylor, I really appreciate you having me on. It's I love the job I get to do. So there are moments where it's tougher. And it's a fishing tournament, you know, it's the life or death side of things comes into play, you know, when you're talking about weather or that, but to have this this view from where I'm at is really, really cool. Yeah. So if people want to, you know, find information, National Walleye Tour, nationalwalleyetour.com, you can log in, you'll see the schedule. You can sign up as a pro yet for the Garrison North Dakota event coming up. I think you've got just a few more days to sign up for that one, but go ahead and get yourself in there. Masters Walleye Circuit. We've got an event coming up in South Dakota, beginning of second weekend of August. And then Cass Lake, which is always a blast. A lot of great sticks at Cass Lake. We'll have that event. It's our usual end of the season event for the Masters Walleye Circuit. Go to masterswalleyecircuit.com. And if you're really into walleye fishing, get yourself involved in a local club. The Walleye Federation is great. You get your opportunity to go to the National Team Championship, the 300 boat event, where you're winning $25,000 cash and a boat. For a $300 entry fee, not too shabby. So, yeah, those are great resources. WalleyeFederation.com, NationalWalleyeTour.com, and MastersWalleyeCircuit.com.
Taylor, thank you so much, man, and reach out anytime.
All right, cool. I will.